You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller and Moulton on this Thursday. Thanks so much for being with us. Ron Cyrak to talk Masters in a little more than 30 minutes' time. The Masters, the focus of our poll question, a little different take on Scheffler versus the field. Because, I mean, he's not Tiger, even though he's hitting the ball like Tiger, but that's a whole other story. So we threw in a wrinkle, didn't we?
We definitely have a wrinkle. Who are you taking in the Masters? Scheffler? A LIV golfer? Or the rest of the field?
Ah, see, there's 13 LIV golfers, including the defending champion, John Rahm. You know, a little Koepka, little DJ. Action. Little Sergio. Got seven LIVers who have won this tournament before. So there you go. Scheffler, LIV, everybody else, the other 75 guys. I took the other 75 guys.
Oh, I thought for sure you'd take the LIV just because.
No. I'm going with Shoffley. I'm telling you. He's going to win by four, maybe five. It's just, it's his. Rom won by four last year. Okay, I'm just telling you, he's due. He's been playing too well. He figures it out. He doesn't choke like a big hairy dog, even if he does have to lay up on 15 on Sunday to keep from choking. But whatever. I don't know why I think he's going to finally win.
There, too. I mean, he's not going to. It's Augusta. It's the back nine. And if he's in the hunt, can he handle it will be the key to me. But there's nothing about what you said up until not choking that isn't right. True.
So, I don't know. He's just due. I think when he wins, it was kind of like when Duval finally broke through at the Open Championship. I think he won by three or four. I mean, when the guys, you know, the way Phil won his first major, it, to me, was unusual. You know, shooting 31 on the back nine, coming from behind, winning by one. Usually when guys are coming close, and they can't do it, when they break through, it's a waltz.
20 years ago today, Phil's first major, winning the Masters.
One of Nance's best calls. Because it wasn't scripted. Is it his time? Yes! You know, it was good. All right. He was up for the moment. Phil with that big leap. I mean, 4 or 5 inches off the ground.
I'm telling you, they slid not one but two Augusta phone books underneath that jump. He was up so high.
Ooh-wee. Boy, to repair those spike marks. Boy, they were deep. They were deep.
It's only because Phil was a little heavier then.
Did you see one of the stories Phil told this week? You know, they just said, hey, you know, been here a lot, 3 wins, bunch of top twos and threes. And so he told the story about how they don't do it anymore. But when you win that night, you have dinner at the club. And it's usually with the chairman and some of the, you know, most prestigious members of Augusta. So you go from that ceremony, you know, butler cabin, then they have a ceremony outside, and then you go into the club and they treat you to dinner. So Phil, and I guess Hootie Johnson was the, you know, chairman at the time. And he said, Mr. Chairman, I hear in your wine cellar that you've got some really good stuff. How about you break out some of the good stuff? And so Hootie goes, absolutely, Mr. Mickelson, no problem. And so Phil thinks, you know, Augusta, it's on Augusta. Apparently, his wife, Amy, overhears the chairman say to somebody who works there, so go downstairs and get boom, 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 and make sure Mr. Mickelson gets the tab. At which point, Amy grabs his elbow and says, listen, what you guys normally do is just fine. Okay, you know, whatever you normally do, I'm sure it'll be just fine. We're just honored to finally, you know, be in this room at this time and what have you. And Amy sat down and took a look at Phil and said, listen, I don't even know if we were going to break even with what you just tried to pull. We might have lost money on this tournament. So there you go. Amy coming to the rescue again.
That's the truth. I got to. Now, that's a wine cellar I'd like to see.
No kidding. No kidding.
But think about that. You win the Masters. You want to, you know, you're probably excited. You want to go party with your friends with your, no. You're going to stick around, have dinner with the chairman, and, yep, and you're going to like it.
Dinner's at 9. Okay. All right. Sounds good to me. You know, my parents are waiting. Okay. I'll tell them we'll be home at 11. You think
right.
I'll be home by 11? Thank you, sir. But apparently they don't do that dinner anymore. Don't know why, but, you know, whatever. So the Masters getting underway. A little rain delayed right now. They'll probably tee off late morning. I don't know if they'll get in everybody today. Then if you're delaying this sucker a little bit, you know, usually the last guys finish with less than an hour of sunlight. So my guess is whoever's teeing off late is not going to finish today.
Probably right.
And windy, apparently, first 2 days.
I mean, like windy.
Gusty. Yes.
Like yes. Gusts to 30 miles an hour, sustained winds 15, 20 miles an hour, as if that course needed some more protection.
Right. So there you go. Ron Syrak to join us in 30 minutes' time. So I told you I'm going to be a pain for the next 2 weeks. If somebody prints a mock draft, I read it. I need to lay down. I need some medication. I have a problem.
What are you focusing on now, though? The second half of the mock drafts, the, you know, pick 16 through 32. Are you trying to create your own mock draft?
I'm focusing on the mock drafts from guys who I think have good information. So I'm looking for two things. So who's truly going to make trades? Like, it's real easy to say that the Vikings are going to trade up with Arizona and the Cardinals are going to get the Vikings 2 first-round picks and then whatever else Minnesota has to throw into the deal, and that the Arizona Cardinals are going to end up with 3 first-round picks, 11, 23, and 27. Okay. I think most of us would nod our head and go, yeah, I see that happening. And then the Vikings take, I'm guessing, J.J. McCarthy. I don't know, possibly Drake May. If New England goes in a different direction at 3, whatever. But I saw an interesting trade yesterday. Denver's at 12. Pittsburgh's at 20. Pittsburgh sees Brian Thomas of LSU still on the board at 12. The fourth wide receiver in this draft. And Pittsburgh calls Denver. You know, remember, Denver doesn't have a second-round pick. Meanwhile, the Steelers have 2/3, along with 2/6, to throw in there. I mean, they don't have a 5th or a 7th, but, I mean, in terms of capital, they've got 2 3s and 2 6s. What does Denver need? Denver needs a lot.
Picks. They need players.
Picks. Right. Like, Denver picks at 12 and doesn't pick again until the third round. And so the draft that I saw, they said Pittsburgh moves up 8 spots to get Brian Thomas, because that's the draw of the line in the, we think there are 4 receivers that are better than the rest. Even though, you know, we like Ladd McConkey and the 2 Texas wideouts and Keon Coleman and all that, but that's the second tier of receivers. And first off, the Steelers don't make draft day deals. Although this GM is far more aggressive, Omar is, than the guy he got the job from that he was assistant to for like 15 years. Far more aggressive. So that one interested me. I'm like, okay. And Denver moves down to 20, and who do they take?
Penix.
Bo Nix.
Okay, Bo Nix, yeah.
Because Penix went 13 to the Raiders. Interesting. Okay.
You know, I'm not saying I wouldn't want to be Michael Penix because he's going to get drafted and he's going to get his shot. But he and Nix are, I've seen him as high now as you have 13 Penix. I've seen Nix at 12. I've seen both of them in the second round. Penix especially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Be a long night in the green room if Penix shows. It could be a long night if Penix shows up. He could be there for a while, if you know what I mean. You know, like into Friday.
Like the Will Levis?
Yeah.
And like another Will Levis draft? Yeah, I could see that. So, you know, interesting thing is like Baltimore and Tampa Bay made a trade. Baltimore moves up from 30 to 26. And Tampa Bay moves back. I'm assuming Baltimore, I mean, Baltimore's got two fours. You know, is an extra fourth round pick enough for Tampa Bay to move back? Or does Tampa, who I believe they don't have a third.
Tampa? Tampa has two thirds.
No, two thirds. I'm sorry. Does Tampa insist on saying, no, 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 you got to do better in a fourth?
To move up four spots, I would think so, but that's just me.
So, you know, but they had a deal in which the Ravens move up four spots, and that for the Lions in this mock draft, because the other thing that I'm looking at, Mark, is mock drafts that are from people that I think have information that's more trustworthy than most. I'm curious to see, okay, who's falling? And Chop Robinson and Kool-Aid McKinstry in a lot of mock drafts are the two defensive players that are falling. And in this particular mock draft, 9 offensive tackles went in the first round. 9. Jets, by the way, moved down from 10 to 15. Colts traded up for Bowers. Jets took a tackle at 15. And I have to admit, if I'm running the Jets, I'm really torn. I understand Bowers, and he may be a better player than the tackles that are available potentially, especially if I move down. But where do I need help more? I got a left tackle. I got 233 or older tackles on my roster. So, I mean, those are the things that interested me in the mock draft. Steelers moving up to get the fourth wide receiver before that falters a little bit. The defensive players that fall because this draft was offensive tackle heavy. People moved for offensive linemen. Okay. I mean, one of these has to be right. Right? No? Okay, good.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour, Ron Cyrak. In a little more than 15 minutes, we'll talk the Masters, which is weather delayed right now, at least an hour. They have not given any other update but that. We're supposed to start at 8. It now will not start earlier than 9. The expectation is it will push back even further than that, but we'll get underway late in the morning. Chad Forbes to talk NFL draft at the top of the hour, and David LaRalla to talk some Major League Baseball in a little more than an hour.
The Masters is the basis of our poll question today. Who are you taking in the Masters? Scottie Scheffler, an LIV golfer, or the rest of the field? The rest of the field getting the majority of the vote at the moment. Go to that Mark Miller, the David Moulton, or Miller underscore Moulton on X to vote.
13 LIV golfers, 7 of whom have won here. And if you take a look at the leaderboard from last year, I think 4 of the top 6 currently play on the LIV tour. All right. So 2+ weeks ago, a little more than that, almost 3 weeks ago, this Ohtani gambling story, you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, David, by all accounts, this investigation's coming to an end pretty quickly. They figured this was easy, David. This did not take any great detective work. Apparently, the interpreter took all the money. He's guilty. Case closed, right?
You know, I sense some genuine sarcasm there. I sense some insincerity in your voice.
I don't know about insincerity. I've just kind of read the story a couple times, and that's all I'm saying. This is done. The investigation's about to be over. He's guilty of everything. He's a thief. Ohtani knew nothing. Nothing, I tell you. $4.5 million stolen. Never knew a damn thing happened.
Well, and it turns out that it's probably more than $4.5 million. But yes, Mark, federal authorities have concluded, according to reports by the New York Times and TMZ Sports, the federal authorities, and that includes not only the IRS, but I believe it's also the Department of Homeland Security. It's been a joint federal investigation. They have concluded that this interpreter, Mizuhara, they stole all the money and Ohtani knew nothing. And we all wondered, well, how the heck can that be? Well, apparently he did two things. First off, he changed it so that Ohtani stopped getting like updates when money was withdrawn from his accounts. That's number one. But also, apparently, Mizuhara managed to change an account settings so that Ohtani like had no idea what was going on. So they concluded the interpreter was lying. Ohtani was completely in the dark. And they also have concluded that Ohtani has been very forthcoming. And Mizuhara is likely going to plead to a bunch of stuff and go to jail for quite a while. But
Ohtani did nothing wrong, knew nothing. The only thing he did wrong was he was duped.
Correct. To the tune of a minimum of $4.5 million. But he had nothing to do with nothing. He didn't pay these guys' debts, you know, the supposed his signature on checks. I guess we're going to find out it wasn't Ohtani's signature. I don't know. But that's according to the IRS and the Department of Homeland Security. Just curious, gut feeling. Do you go, okay, it's possible. I mean, let's face it. Bunch of rich and famous people have had a ton of money stolen from them.
Throughout time, David. There's right. No question that this has happened over and over and over again.
Just curious whether or not people believe it.
I don't.
So you think this is a huge cover-up?
Yes. You're that meticulous about your training, but you don't have but here, take my phone and do whatever you want with it. Here, have my computer. In fact, you know what? Oh, you just need to print some stuff out? Yeah, use my computer. Oh, that book right there next to computer, that has all my passwords in it. Help yourself to that too.
I have to admit, the timing of this, because I did not think what you were thinking when I saw this report last night. But who's been in the country the last couple of days? I think the foreign minister of Japan. I think the prime minister of Japan
right.
has been meeting with Biden for the last yes. couple of days. They've been talking about
big life. Dinner in New York, raising a bunch of money last right. night. Right.
Life in the pursuit of happiness mm-hmm. and how they're going to combat China and Russia. I just thought from a timing standpoint, this isn't good because you could see where one of the things on the agenda could be, all right, let's talk Ohtani. I mean, if you're into conspiracy theories, if you're into cover-ups, couldn't you see where the prime minister of Japan looks at Biden and says, all right, what do I have to give you to make this Ohtani stuff go away? And by the way, you got to chop Mizuhara up and you got to put them in oil tanks and, you know, you got to bury those out. But anyway, what do we?
To which Biden says, done it before. We'll do it again.
If that's what Biden says. No. You got to handle the body. But I can take care of the Ohtani thing. We'll just blame it on the interpreter. Done deal. So I have to admit, I thought the timing was bad for this story to break. I would have waited till the prime minister left the country. Because if you believe in conspiracies and cover-ups and what have you, I mean, you literally think they've been meeting about it for 2 days in New York or D.C. or wherever the heck they're meeting. That's all. So you don't believe it. You think Otani did something. You don't think he was just naive and stupid.
I have a lot of trouble believing he was just naive and stupid. I do.
Okay.
Because you don't think he's wired that way.
Right.
Given how he treats other aspects of his life.
And we don't know. Maybe he is because he's so incredibly private. Maybe he, you know, maybe he can't. Maybe he's like my mom. And when she had to get her taxes done and she had to come to my house and I had to finish it on the computer for her. Maybe. Maybe a little bit of, you know, David Moultonitis that just has trouble with the apps on the computer and needed the handler there to handle all the finances. I guess it's possible. Doesn't seem like it.
You're not buying it.
No.
Well, anyway, that's apparently the story, and they're sticking to it. I'm sure there'll be a press conference one day, and all these questions and concerns that you have, Mark, will be answered.
$4.5 million, and we've got the whole investigation done, finalized, wrapped up in 2 weeks. In
the guy
2 weeks,
he did it.
Come on, David.
I stole the money. Who took it? I did.
How'd you do it? Here's how I did it,
Mark. I watched Law & Order and Blue Bloods. They hand the guy a yellow tablet, a pen, and he writes down how he did it. That's what Mizuhara did. They got him some takeout. They gave him a notepad and a pen. And he wrote it all out. Top of page 2, Otani was stupid. Okay, and he lists all the reasons why. Here's my question. When this Mizuhara guy eventually gets deported and he goes back to Japan, okay, is he going to disappear? We're never going to hear from him again? Or is he going to have a penthouse? And I think the outcome determines really how this story goes.
Miller and Moulton. Time now for our Molly Maid play of the day. Trent, what do you have for us?
We're up against it for time, so I'll just hit you with it. The Nailers yesterday, National Siblings Day. A couple of homers in the fourth.
Center field, deep. Fletcher back. On the track, out of room, out of here. Back come the Guardians on one swing of the bat by Bo Naylor. The home run brothers for Cleveland here in the fourth.
Naylor would go on to walk it off in the 10th for the Guards as well. They're 9-3.
Call Molly Maid today, 239-774-5839. That's 239-774-5839.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Ron Cyrak, he contributes to the Golf Channel. He writes on roncyrak.com, S-I-R-A-K.com, and you follow Ron on X at Ron Cyrak, S-I-R-A-K. Ron, it's David and Mark once again. Good morning. Happy Masters. How are you?
Always a special week. Always fun to get this tournament underway. It's just, it looks like today we're going to have to wait a little bit longer than normal to get it started.
Listen, when we say the Masters to you, Ron, what do you think of?
Tradition. I mean, you know, the amount of really cool traditions they have there is off the charts. It's the Champions Dinner on Tuesday night. Last night was the Golf Writers Dinner. It was the 50th Golf Writers Dinner. That's where all the awards are given out that the writers vote for, and all the players are there. And then this morning will be the ceremony opening tee shots hit by Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Tom Watson. It's just, you know, right down to ending with putting the green jacket on the winner. It's all about tradition.
And from the looks of it, obviously today is going to be wet and windy. The wind brings a whole nother element to this golf course, doesn't it, Ron?
Yeah, it does. I've been checking my emails all morning. I got my last weather bulletin that Augusta National sent me was at 5 o'clock this morning, and at that point they said that they're not going to start before 9 a.m. today. It looks like it's more. They're talking about that ceremonial tee shot will be hit probably about 10:10 this morning, so that would mean that they're not going to get out on the course until 10:30. They already had about 3/4 of an inch of rain. They're going to get about a half an inch more. Water they can deal with brilliantly at Augusta. They have sub-air drying under all the greens and in some of the low spots of the fairway, so they can dry the course out. But it sounds like at least into mid-afternoon, they're going to have sustained winds at about 17 miles an hour, gusting up to 25, 30. So that's going to be a real challenge.
You know, the Masters quietly made some news in the last 48 hours. Didn't the chairman say that they support the USGA and the R&A and the rolling back of the golf ball? Didn't they say that they're on board with that?
Yeah, you know, and I think that of all the major championships, look, I honestly thought that there was a chance at Augusta National. If the R&A and the USGA did not act on the golf ball, I thought there was a chance Augusta National would impose their own golf ball, because you know, they've stretched that venue out really as far as they could. Last year they added 35 yards to number 13. This year they've added 10 yards to number 2. When I first started going to the Masters in 1988, it measured for the tournament about 6950. And now they're stretching it out to, you know, over 7500. There's just no place more for them to go. They really need the golf ball to be reined in so that that golf course doesn't get overwhelmed by technology.
What are the biggest changes of the course in that period of time, Ron? You said you first got there in 88. This place has changed a lot over that time span. What's the biggest?
It's funny. The tradition of Augusta used to be that they wouldn't tell us what changes they did. We'd have to go out and walk the course early in the week and try to figure out what changes. They're much more open about doing that now, but... One year, there's a great story. One year, Sam Snead arrived there, and he says, they've moved the tee back on number one. And one of the green jacket officials, nope, didn't do that. Snead says, you moved the tee back on number one. They said, no, didn't do that. And finally, Snead says, look, you either move the tee back or you move the clubhouse forward, because it's in a, we're in a different place than we were last year. But that's stretching it out, and to me, the bad thing about them stretching it out is the Masters used to be the major championship that a veteran player could get by and contend in just on guile and local knowledge and knowing that golf course. And now they've made it so long that it's impossible for that to happen there. Number one tee shot, that hole is so much harder than it was when I first got there. The long hitters used to be able to fly it to the crosswalk and get up and have a short iron in. Now they're driving right into the side of that hill, and it's a real challenge, because the course is all about position play. You got to go from point A to point B to point C. As Nick Faldo famously said, there's a route around Augusta. You got to find it and follow it, and they've made it harder to find that route because you got to hit the ball so far.
Talking the Masters with Ron Cyrak, ronsyrak.com. You can also see him and hear him on the Golf Channel and follow him on X at Ron Cyrak, S-I-R-A-K. You know, it's still a place, though. You know, Tiger continues to make the cut. He's 48. Phil finished T2 last year at, what, 52, I think? You know, Freddie was in the final group when he was 50. I mean, you know, experience, and at least to your early 50s, you still got a chance here, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, again, Faldo, who used to mentally dissect that course better than anybody, his great line is, Augusta National seduces you. It's got really wide fairways and virtually no rough, but you only can use a third of the fairway. It's got really big greens, but you can only use a quarter of the green. So it seduces you into thinking it's sort of a big, wide open space out there, but you really have to be in the right position off the tee to be able to hit the right approach shots to the green. You know, it's the kind of golf course, we've all seen those greens, where you're better off having a 40-foot uphill putt than a 10-foot downhill putt. So you got to put the ball not only on the green, but in the right place on the green. And that local knowledge, that the people who've been there and know how to find their way around. There were so many holes where if you want to get close to the hole, you don't go at the flag. You go for a spot 50 feet away from the flag because it's going to feed down to it. And you only learn that by playing there a lot.
All right, if I told you you couldn't pick Scottie Scheffler, who would you take?
You know, going on my everything works for somebody for 2 weeks, and we saw that mallet putter work for Scottie Scheffler for 2 weeks. I like the fact that Roy McIlroy has gotten to Butch Harmon as his coach within the last couple of weeks, and he finished with a strong 66 last week. I'm looking for Roy to complete the career Grand Slam this week.
Don't you think it all depends? Rory can't get off to a decent start in these majors, especially the Masters. I mean, Ron, if you were Rory and we said to you this morning, I'll give you a 70, he wouldn't leave the hotel room, would he?
I think you're right about that. I, to me, the tragic flaw for Rory, and I felt this way for, I was with him when he won his first PGA Tour tournament in 2010 at Quail Hollow in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he is the best driver of the golf ball I've ever seen. And with his A game, I think he has, since 2010, been the unquestioned best golfer in the world. Rory's problem is he has never figured out how to win with his B game. He gets frustrated. You see it in his body language after. Tiger Woods won with his B game all the time. But I don't know if I've ever seen any great golfer shoot as many nine-hole rounds in the 40s as I've seen Rory McIlroy shoot. When he goes out there and it starts to go a little south for him, he doesn't adapt well and adjust. And that whole thing of getting out to a good start and then feeling that confidence and feeling good going into the rest of the game, the round, the weekend, is hugely important for him. Yes, if he gets out of the gate quickly, it could be a really good week for him.
With him going back with Harmon, what do you think the reasons why the switch was made?
You know, it's funny because part of what Butch does really well as a coach, Butch doesn't tinker with your swing a whole lot. He's one of those people who believes there's more than one right way to swing a golf club. The key is to be able to repeat your swing. And Butch works more with your mind than anything else. Butch is an amazing cheerleader. You talk to any player who has ever worked with Butch Harmon, and they'll tell you, he makes me feel so good about my game. And I think that's exactly what Rory needs, is he needs somebody in his ear talking to him to get that best golf out of him. And to do exactly what I said before, is to convince him that even when you're not hitting it exactly the way you want to hit it, you can still score well. You got to figure a way to turn those 74s into 71s, you know, and maximize everything that's in there. And I think that's probably what Rory, you look, what have been the weaknesses for Rory's game? He's not all that good from 100 yards in. Butch could tinker with that a little bit, but I really think it's the mental stuff. It's getting into Rory's head and convincing him, selling it to him, you're the best player in the world, go out there and play like it.
Ron, I can't remember when so many top players have made so many recent changes before the Masters. I mean, Scheffler changes putters and then gets two wins in a second. So, okay, that works. But Rory going to Butch, JT firing his caddy, Koepka last week changing putters. I mean, within 10 days of the Masters, I mean, people don't do this normally.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the tragic flaws that you see among all golfers is nothing's ever their fault, you know. If you're not playing well, you fire your caddy. You're not playing well, you fire your coach, you know. I always thought that when Tiger was his peak Tiger, he was sort of like the Pittsburgh Steelers of golf, you know. Get somebody that you trust in charge and run it that way. And, you know, he had Steve Williams on that bag for, all but one of his major championships. He went through a couple of different coaches, but he would never change anything all that drastically. But it certainly is one of the ways golfers are. Nothing's ever your fault. Always got to blame somebody else.
You know, the LIV guys are all screaming for a merger. Does winning a green jacket by a LIV player help that?
Hey, speaking of that, I think that the merger is going to be hung up by regulatory issues and stuff. But boy, I'll tell you what, John Rahm has sounded to me this week very much like somebody who's regretting his decision. You know, he was talking about that LIV needs to go to 72 hole formats. Well, does he know that that means that they can't call it LIV anymore? Because LIV is 54 in Roman numerals. They'd have to call it LXXII, you know. And so, but he's sounding very much like somebody who's missing everything about the PGA Tour. He's missing defending titles. He's missing, I think, the camaraderie of the other guys out there. And I think more than anything, he's missing the fans, you know. I wasn't at the Doral event for LIV, but people I know who were there were saying there were more spectators at the Augusta National Women's Amateur last week than there were at the LIV event. And all that excitement, all that electricity around the PGA Tour and Pro Golf, I think John Rahm is missing. But the short answer to your question is the issue of a merger is way bigger than the green jacket, way bigger than winning majors. It's going to involve regulatory issues, and I don't see a quick end to getting around those.
Ron, listen, the Big Ten's got what? How many schools now? You know, I mean, trust
217,
me,
217.
Exactly. I mean, so we don't necessarily. They could still call themselves LIV and play 72 holes. They really can. They could just say we're a new conference, and people go, "Oh, okay, we get it."
Yeah, they absolutely could, but you know. I think that part of it's going to be, and for the life of me, I can't figure out how this other $3 billion that PGA Tour has gotten from these corporate entities is going to play into a possible merger with LIV, too. And I don't understand, it's hard for me to picture exactly what this is going to look like, because I don't think the Saudis are going to give up control of what they already have. I certainly know they're not going to open up their books to regulatory agencies, you know, who are going to want to see exactly the flow of money through the organization. And, you know, and there's antitrust issues there that I just don't think they're ever going to provide the transparency that's going to be needed to get around those issues.
Ron Cyrak. He covers golf at ronsirak.com and on the golf channel. Follow Ron on X at Ron Cyrak, S-I-R-A-K. Ron, thanks so much for your time. Stay dry, safe travels back, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Hopefully we'll see some golf later today. Talk to you down the road, my friend.
Yep. Ron Cyrak, kind enough to join us. Right now, what, it's been pushed back to 10:10?
10:30.
10:30?
10:30. It looks like golf is going to start at 10:30 by the last little blurb that I had seen come across my phone.
So Jack and Gary and Tom Watson at 10:10 and golf at 10:30, which means they're what, 2.5 hours late? Because tee times are supposed to start at 8.
Yes.
Which means, by the way, the last group of Fleetwood and that, they're going to tee off at 4:30. So, you know, they're going to get to maybe the 12th tee. Maybe. And they'll be done for the day. But how about that, by the way, if you get through 11 and then you got to come back tomorrow and your first shot's a tee shot on 12. Huh? Sleep on that. All right, let's switch to the draft. Chad Forbes, let's talk the NFL.